You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated...
It is Tuesday, May 10th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is The Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Republicans still fracturing over Medicare. Will they rely on some blue dog Democrats to do their work for them? Alan Simpson. Purely evil or also mixed in with stupid? We will delve into that question in the program today. It is also National Asthma Month. Coal, big coal, actually, kudos to them doing something to deal with this illness. And later in the program, children react to the death of Osama bin Laden. Isn't that lovely? And maybe I'll give an update. Yesterday, for those of you who are not members, you did not have the opportunity to hear about my daughter's proclivity to cut her hair in direct defiance. I don't care how she cuts her hair. It's just that I don't want a 5.5-year-old taking a pair of scissors so close to her scalp that she looks like G.I. Jane. So my daughter has like... 1/8 of her forehead is a crew cut, and then the rest is about 12 inches long hair. It's a strange look. Doesn't seem to bother her, though, and it doesn't really bother me if it doesn't bother her, but I just don't want her cutting her hair. In the post show, I will give you the update, because there was some controversy as to whether or not should I punish her, should I even talk about punishing her. It's wrong. In Denmark, apparently, they don't punish. I got emails. I don't know what. But I will give you the much-anticipated response to what I did and why my daughter is no longer living with us and was taken away by social services. Listener, Kim emails me. I heard you mention the horrific cuts in the New York City public education currently being proposed. I want to thank you again for speaking the truth about what's happening to our public schools under the so-called reform movement. There is a rally this Thursday being organized by teachers and parents. I hate going to rallies, but I might just have to go to this one in light of Bloomberg's plan to slash thousands of teachers. You can go to nycpublicschoolparents.blogspot.com. nycpublicschoolparents.blogspot.com. For more info, we'll post that on the blog at majority.fm. Folks, if you have direct action that's coming up that you're aware of, don't hesitate to email me at majorityreporters@gmail.com. I will, at the very least, talk about it. I think it's becoming more and more important for people to take this to the streets for these domestic issues. It didn't seem to work much for the war, but in more localized settings, I think these protests actually have a big impact. And I know, and I'm trying to track down more information on some direct actions that are taking place on May 12th in New York and San Francisco, a couple other cities. We are efforting, as we say, guests on those topics. Meanwhile, on the budget battle, debt ceiling front, I know there's been so much information out there, and none of it's, you know, it's all just sort of like mounting forces. And to a large extent, there's not a lot we can do about this, except perhaps pressure our own individual senators. But this is some good news. Alexander Bolton in The Hill reports Senate Republicans have decided to avoid jeopardizing their chances of capturing the upper chamber in next year's elections and will not echo the House GOP's call for a major overhaul of the popular health entitlement for seniors. She's referring to Medicare. 6 months after their historic triumph in the 2010 elections, Republicans are now treading more carefully on cutting Medicare. Again, folks, 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. I would love to hear from a conservative who believes that we should be cutting Medicare and explain to me why the Republicans are so cowardly about it. Senator Pat Toomey is introducing a budget today, theoretically, which will not include the Medicare. This is a crucial proposal for Senate Republicans because they are too cowardly to vote for what they really want, which is the destruction of Medicare, and so they need a budget to vote for. Toomey's will provide that. At the same time, hopefully Harry Reid is continuing to plan to make the Republicans vote on that Ryan budget. However, there is a backdoor version of this. And sadly, it has been proposed, at least in part, or co-proposed by a Democrat, Claire McCaskill of Missouri. She has proposed with Republican Bob Corker of Tennessee a plan to cap U.S. government spending, a blanket cap, aims to save $7.6 trillion over 10 years by capping federal spending at 20.6% of gross domestic product within a decade, down from 24.3% now. Reaching that goal, writes Bloomberg News, would require enormous cuts in Medicare and Medicaid and other programs, likely force similar policy changes to the entitlement programs that Ryan has proposed. So what you have here is another cowardly way of doing it. They want to protect the assets of the wealthy in this country, foreclose any attempts for inflation that would push up wages, would devalue existing loans. And so they create this deficit hysteria. They realize that the American public has already spoken as to what they want cut, defense, how they want the deficit to be shrunk, raise taxes. And these corporatists don't want to do it. They know they can't call for specific cuts in Medicare, so they create this blanket, this trigger that will take place years in the future. Paul Van De Water, healthcare expert at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, said the Corker-McCaskill plan at first blush may sound sort of benign. The effects on real people in many cases would be extremely dire. Robert Reichhauer, former director of the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, called McCaskill-Corker proposal a sham. So MoveOn.org has sent out a message to its email list, basically encouraging people to call their senators, fight this plan that is being aided and abetted by McCaskill, Manchin, and Mark Udall. They have slightly different spending cap trigger plans, but they all ultimately mean the same. Call Dick Durbin at 202-224-2152, the Senate whip, and tell him you are counting on him to oppose spending caps that contain a Medicare kill switch. 202-224-2152. So, just one more indication that at the end of the day, it is the wealthy's interests who are protected, not the rest of the country, not the other 80 to 90%. And continuing on that theme, Alan Simpson, who, the man's a horrible human being. I mean, he's a horrible human being. He's not a terrorist, although if he had his way, I imagine his proposals would kill thousands upon thousands. But in a slow, sort of like the frog can't feel the water boiling way. But I think it is also time for us to consider that the man is an ignoramus. How could a senator be an ignoramus? Well, I don't even think I need to address that. But in this case, Simpson, I think, was handed his, his good fortune, I think, from his daddy. This is a man who is living on a pension. Well, not just a pension. He's quite wealthy, actually. But he's also receiving a pension from the U.S. government. He served as a Republican for almost 19 years. He is on he gets that whopping Senate pension. Doesn't seem to have a problem with that. I haven't read that he's given it back. Less than 20 years he serves, he gets that pension. I don't know. But let's listen to him at, was at some C-SPAN, with Erskine Bowles. Those two of the Cat Food Commission, getting interviewed, talking about more debt hysteria to justify his cuts on stuff that helps, the teat suckers out there. The 300 million teat suckers, as he calls them, who suck off the teat of America with that Social Security. All right, listen to this, because this is a stunning lack of understanding of the basic facts in which he's talking about.
Let me just say the greatest myth of all is Social Security, that somebody stole $2.5 trillion, stole it. That's right, cheap, corrupt politicians stole $2.5 trillion, which is the reserves of Social Security.
Stop. Now, what Alan Simpson is referring to, remember, he is a, what do you call those? A chip in a sliver? What do you call an alumni? His daddy was a senator. And so, Simpson was bequeathed the Senate. His daddy voted against the Civil Rights Act in 1964. Nice man. Just, didn't like those teat suckers. And anyways, Simpson's talking about the $2.5 trillion in the Social Security Trust Fund. He's saying they claim that it's been stolen. Well, it hasn't been stolen yet, but at least he is indicating that there is a $2.5 trillion trust fund that has been borrowed by the United States that is earning interest. This is the first time he's been able to do this. And people aren't claiming that it's been stolen. People are claiming that this and what he is attempting to do is an attempt to steal that money by redirecting it from what it was meant to be, the trust fund from the Social Security, and using it to pay off the debts incurred by the tax cuts to the wealthy and never repaying it. Continue.
Reserves of Social Security. The greatest myth in Social Security is this. Hang on tight. I went right to the AARP. I said, if I'm lying, stop me.
Stop him. This is a problem, isn't it? Well, I'm not the AARP, so I can actually let him continue with his lies.
Social Security is not a retirement program. It was never intended as a retirement program. It was set up in 37 and 38 to take care of people who were in distress.
Stop.
Depression.
That's a complete an utter lie. Social Security was never meant to be the sole retirement plan. It was meant to be one leg of a three-legged stool, I guess, of retirement. One being a private pension, one being your savings, and one being Social Security. The fact that we have had diminished pensions in this country, the fact that we have had stagnant wages, has meant that many people rely on Social Security up to 80% of their income. But it does keep two-thirds of our elderly out of poverty.
We're in distress, the depression, wage earners, ditch diggers. It was to give them 43% of the...
Wage earners, ditch diggers. Apparently, Alan Simpson is not aware that the vast majority of Americans are wage earners, not wealthy, investor class, capital gains tax paying sons of former senators who are bequeathed a Senate seat. It's very hard for him to understand this because his worldview is so narrow.
It was to give them 43% of the replacement rate in their wages. The life expectancy was 63, and that's why they set the retirement at 65. The beginning of the Ponzi.
Lie. It never Stop. Had any- it's not a Ponzi scheme. It's not a Ponzi scheme unless you run out of people to contribute to the system. In other words, it would be a Ponzi scheme if some type of special underage 65 bomb went off and killed everyone under the age of 65. And this would actually only, and you'd no longer be able to support Social Security until after the year 2037. So the bomb would have to drop in 2037, kill everybody under the age of 65, and then it would be a Ponzi scheme, because a Ponzi scheme is one where it is destined to fail, because at one point you will not get enough people to pay in. But that will not be the case unless he is able to develop a special bomb that kills only young people. We will get to his complete lack of understanding of average age of life expectancy in a moment. Continue.
65, the beginning of the Ponzi. It never had anything to do with disability insurance, which was added to it. It's not structurally able to handle that. That will be broke in 8 years. DI, disability insurance, is being used and overused right now to be broke. And guess who will take care of that? The feds.
Stop.
It was never.
Well, how did it happen? How is disability insurance added to the Social Security insurance program? He has a problem with the orphans and with disabled people getting. I don't know what he anticipates we would do with this, but somehow it's an affront to him. The people who would be disabled and unable to work. I don't know if he's implying that some people just sort of cheat there. I'm sure he hangs out with a lot of people who are on Social Security disability. And those orphans, they get away with so much. You know, back in his day, when he was living the life of a senator's son, I'm sure he saw the movie Oliver Twist and saw how orphans really should be treated.
New shoes and all.
That's right. Please, sir, may I have some more? Continue.
And guess who will take care of that? The feds. It was never intended to take care of children in college up to 22. It was never built for that. In 1950, when I was a freshman at the university, 16 people were paying into the system and one taking out. Today, there are 3.1 people paying into the system and one taking out. And in 10 years, there'll be two people paying
Stop.
Into the system.
The people at the Social Security Administration would have to be complete morons to not perceive changes in demographics. You have 65 years notice as to when someone will be eligible for Social Security. It is true, there are the ratio of workers to retirees has changed and gone down. At the same time, productivity and money during that period increased. And to the extent that people anticipated a change in those demographics, the baby boom, remember, it's called the baby boom. It wasn't called the future retirees boom because they knew it when they were babies. So they had 60 some odd years to project what will happen when these people grow that age. Well, in 1983, the Social Security Administration, when Reagan raised taxes with Alan Greenspan on payroll, anticipated, as measured in 1994 by the Social Security Administration, that we have anticipated the increase in retirees at that time, which is why we created a trust fund. Continue.
Out, and in 10 years, there'll be two people paying into the system and one taking out. How long do you think two people are going to sit still to finance somebody, regardless of their net worth or their income, on that?
Stop. I don't know what that means. Is that the end of it? I don't know what that means. How long do you think two people... Do you know how many people you're paying for on Social Security?
No clue.
No. No one has a clue. And no one has a problem with it as long as you keep the promise. So, Huffington Post, Ryan Grimm, I guess, calls Alan Simpson and says, hey, are you aware that you don't know what you're talking about? HuffPost suggested to Simpson during a telephone interview that his claim about life expectancy was misleading because his data included people who died in childhood of diseases that are now largely preventable. I have said this many times before. There is no value in the context of Social Security to look at what the average life expectancy was, let's say in 1940. Because at that time, people died when they were young, quite a bit. There was no antibiotics. In fact, my father had strep throat when he was a kid. You can still see the scar where they had to pop something in his trachea to get him to breathe. And so that is the figure that he is using. All those kids die when they're 8 or 10 or 12 or 15 or 20. It brings the average life expectancy down. The fact of the matter is that for anybody who reached the age of 65 in 1940, their life expectancy, if you were a woman, was to almost the age of 80. And for men, it was almost the age of 78. That figure has gone up only by about 4 or 5 years. But in fact, it's gone up 1 year for everybody in the bottom half of the income distribution. Do you understand? That in 70 years, the average life expectancy for people who reach the age of 65 has only gone up 4 or 5 years, 4.7, but only 1 year for everyone in the bottom half of the income distribution. That means that lawyers are living longer, but people who are wage earners, construction workers, service industry, nurses, they're not living much longer at all. And then the conservatives in you, the not bright in you, will jump up and say, I've got you, Sam, because there are more people retiring now. And so it's taxing the system. Because they're not dying when they're younger. There's more people retiring now. Well, what were they doing for those 64 years or those 40 years before they retired? They were paying into the system. Like all those kids who died, strep throat or working without safe working conditions or in the shirtwaist triangle factory fire before unions had any power. They were paying into the system. So Grimm says, according to Social Security Administration actuaries, women who lived to 65 in 1940 had a life expectancy of 79.7 years. Men were expected to live 77.7 years. And Simpson said, if that's the case, I don't think it is. That means they put in peanuts. Well, yes. The first people to receive benefits from Social Security did not put in a full amount, and they also did not get more than, like you said, 43% of their wages because people hadn't been paying in for 30 years or 20 years or 60 years. I don't know if this man is stupid or just a pathological liar, but it doesn't matter. Simpson speculated that the data presented him by HuffPost, now he's questioning the data, had been furnished by the Cat Food Commission people. He's talking about people like me or Fire Dog Lake or Save Social Security. A reference to progressive critics of the Deficit Commission. Told that the data came directly from the Social Security Administration, Simpson continued to insist it was inaccurate, while misstating the nature of statistical average. If you're telling me that a guy who got to be 65 in 1940, that all of them lived to be 77, that's just not correct. Just because a guy gets to be 65, he's going to live to be 77? Hell, that's my genre. That's not true. This guy's a fucking moron. It's not that if you reach the age of 65, you automatically get to be 77. It is that of 100 people who reach the age of 65, half of them will live over the age of 77, half of them will live below the age of 77, between 77 and 65. It's the average lifespan. And the issue of whether or not our population has fundamentally changed so much is very important to people who want to destroy Social Security, because if it has fundamentally changed, then you can sell the idea that Social Security never anticipated these changes. But if it hasn't fundamentally changed, you have to address the fact that small tweaks need to be dealt with. The reason why, after the year 2037, Social Security will only pay out 78% of benefits. We'll have no trust fund. The trust fund will be exhausted at that time. It will only be able to pay as you go. The reason why there's a shortfall is because over the past 30 years, income disparity has grown so much that instead of wages slowly increasing underneath that $109,000 cap on Social Security taxes, they have stagnated in the 50,000 range. And meanwhile, the wealthiest pop through. Pop through that cap. So the answer is obviously to raise the cap, more consistent with inflation and more consistent with the disparity in income. Simpson went on to say, the statistics show right now a totally unsustainable program that can't possibly function when 10,000 a day are coming into the Social Security system at 65. Was that ever planned for, that 10,000 a day would suddenly come into the system? Grimm writes, in fact, it was planned for. The Social Security Administration tracks births every year and knew by 1947 that 1946 had been a boom year. When the system was reformed in 83 by the Greenspan Commission, the baby boom was specifically taken into account. The fundamental ratio of beneficiaries to workers was fully taken into account in the 1983 financing provisions, and as a matter of fact was known and taken into account well before that, Social Security's actuaries noted in 1994. Social Security's actuaries didn't see the wild swing in income inequality that came about since 1983. Income has been largely flat for the middle class while rising for the wealthy. Social Security taxes apply only to the first 106,000, so increases for the rich don't contribute to the trust fund. The compensation increases that come in the form of more expensive health care benefits are also not subject to Social Security system. So there you have it, folks. Alan Simpson, an idiot or just evil? We're going to take a break. When we come back, this will be charming. Kids react to the assassination of Osama bin Laden. In just a minute, Sam Seder, The Majority Report. We are back. We've got this video posted on majority.fm. I wanted you here to. It's pretty interesting. I guess it's part of a regular series, you know, kids react to, and usually it's like Justin Bieber stuff or something else. But here are some kids who are reacting to a clip of Obama's speech, the killing of Osama bin Laden. I haven't talked to my 5.5-year-old daughter about Osama bin Laden. Most of these kids range from what I can tell. One is 5, maybe younger. But the rest range from basically 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. One of these kids, a 10-year-old, is incredibly well-spoken. But here's a 2-minute clip of it. Interesting.
So what was the president talking about?
The, what's his name, bin Laden, or whatever his name is.
Osama bin Laden was killed, I saw it on CNN, it was crazy.
Can you talk about who Osama bin Laden was?
Osama bin Laden was the leader of Al-Qaeda, right?
A bad terrorist.
The bad
He's
guy.
A horrible man!
Bad guy.
I don't really know the reason, but he just wants to kill everyone.
And he did something that was not correct.
He destroyed the 2 Twin Towers. A lot of people died that day, like 42 people died.
Yeah, my dad lost a lot of friends to 9/11.
How old were you in 2001?
4.
3.
I was about 1?
2 months old.
I wasn't born.
Do you think there's anything else we could have done besides kill him?
Not really. We could have put up 25 years to life.
Well, we could have put him in prison, but then he might escape and then blow everybody up.
You just go walking.
You don't do that.
They didn't. They tried handling it with words and it didn't work.
Why do you think it took us 10 years to find bin Laden?
Because he was being a coward, running from one place to another.
Because he found a really good place to hide.
Just a camper. He's a camper, like on Black Ops.
Saddam, we found in like a hole. And I don't know if this is correct. I mean, I'm 10, so. And everyone was like, he's hiding in a cave. He's hiding in a cave somewhere out in Afghanistan. He was just hanging out in the mansion.
So did you know that bin Laden had been killed before you saw this?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Well, actually, I didn't see that video, but I knew he was killed.
How did you find out?
Because my mom told me.
My sister sent me a random text saying Osama bin Laden's death. There was a lot of exclamation marks.
And how did it make you feel when you found out?
I felt happy.
Happy.
And I asked my mom, is that a good thing? And then she said, yeah.
I felt very happy, but also kind of bad. Because
why don't you feel bad? One of the worst people in the world is dead.
Sure, it's sad that people die, but since he murdered tons of other innocent people, I mean, he's not innocent.
I was happy that our nation felt pride. That's good, but I'm not cheering because this is still a man's life. It's a bad man's life, but it's still life.
After he died, there were a lot of Americans out on the streets, like, celebrating.
Yeah, they're all like, USA.
So what do you think about that?
I get that.
I mean, it's good to be happy,
but it's sad in a way.
Going out in the streets, that's just a little too much.
Not for good people, but like bad people, yeah, it is okay to celebrate that way.
I just think that's kind of a hypocrite move. When 9/11 happened, they were all cheering in the streets, and we all thought that was wrong.
Someone you knew, like, died in it, then yeah, I would go out there, but not if, like, you were just like, oh, a guy died, let's go sing!
The whole video is definitely worth watching. We have it up on majority.fm. Noam Chomsky also wrote a piece that I think is brings up some interesting points. He writes, in societies that profess some respect for law, suspects are apprehended and brought to fair trial. I stress suspects. Now, you know, one of the things I have lamented that I think really we should all be mourning on some level is the fact that we don't have a system anymore that can deal with this. We did, as late as 1993, probably later than that. But we don't have the capacity to mete out civilized justice anymore. And it is something that we should mourn. Bin Laden won in that respect. He writes, in societies that profess some respect for law, suspects are apprehended and brought to a fair trial. I stress suspects. In April of 2002, the head of the FBI, Robert Mueller, informed the press that after the most intensive investigation in history, the FBI could say no more than it had believed that the plot was hatched in Afghanistan, though implemented in the UAE and Germany. What they only believed in April 2002, they obviously didn't know 8 months earlier when Washington dismissed tentative offers by the Taliban. How serious, we don't know, because they were instantly dismissed. To extradite bin Laden if they were presented with evidence, which, as soon as we learned, Washington didn't have. My understanding of the former claim here, the latter claim, that the Taliban offered to extradite bin Laden was they offered to extradite it to a group of Arab countries, which I think would have been, you know, led by Saudi Arabia, which I think would have been impossible. And not terribly relevant. But there is something to be said by the fact that we all simply take as an article of faith that bin Laden was guilty. Maybe he was guilty, maybe he wasn't. A trial, at the very least, as a means in which to prove to ourselves, if not the rest of the world, that we have a system of justice and that we actually have a civilized and more developed and enlightened system, that would have been nice. Nothing serious has been provided since. There's much talk of bin Laden's confession. This is the video in which he talks about 9/11. But that is rather like my confession that I won the Boston Marathon. He boasted of what he regarded as a great achievement. Chomsky goes on to refer to the name Operation Geronimo. The imperial mentality is so profound throughout Western society that no one can perceive that they are glorifying bin Laden by identifying him with courageous resistance against our genocidal invaders. Slightly ironic. It's like naming our murder weapons after victims of our crimes. Apache, Tomahawk. It's as if the Luftwaffe were to call its fighter planes Jew and Gypsy. Food for thought. I think he's got a good point. It's not just a question that the Apache was, I mean, the Tomahawk, I guess, is really, was actually a tool, a weapon. Apache was a people. So he may be off in terms of Tomahawk. Got a couple of minutes here left. I have to go long today because this is a great story. So the Tea Party had a little press conference. Washington yesterday. We don't have sound of this, right? We don't have
it. No.
No. Monday morning at a press conference in Washington. Tea Party's gets up there to speak. We all know how these people are there. What they are for is the Constitution, the real life Constitution, except for the part about the religious and the religious and the government thing being separated. Oh, what, Tea Partiers? Listen, I can already see it. We're going to put this on YouTube. I can already see the comments. The Tea Partiers crying. You don't know anything about the tea baggers. You don't know. We're about financial fiscal responsibility. It's nothing to do about God or social issues. This is about real patriots getting dressed up in colonial garb and talking about the Constitution. Well, at this Tea Party press conference, speakers from the Cato Institute, to a man dressed as George Washington, to Representative Michelle Bachmann, who sent a written statement that was read aloud, told a small crowd of reporters that House Speaker John Boehner and his GOP leadership team were ignoring their Tea Party mandate by supporting an increase in the federal debt limit. That's right, man. That's what it's all about. It's just about, economics and be responsible. Responsible financial stuff. And we're being taxed too much, even though our taxes are at an all-time low in the life of anybody who can actually speak as a Tea Partier. Anybody who's over the age of 18 and calls them Tea Partier, this is their lowest rate of taxes they've ever paid.
But okay, whatever, Sam, but it's still too high. It should be 0%. That's the only thing that's important. No raise in the debt ceiling.
And Tea Party Founding Fathers Chairman, William Temple, addressed the audience in his trademark colonial garb. He's organizing the Tea Party Freedom Jamboree this fall in Kansas City. And he railed against Boehner and the GOP leadership in a speech, calling them wimpy rhinos. Even Representative Paul Ryan's Medicare-destroying plan was passed by the House last month is a so-called courageous budget. Temple is 100% opposed to raising the debt ceiling. And he said that's how his members will vote on the issue, will be the sole item on the Tea Party scorecard when it comes to rating candidates in 2012. Vote for the increase, you get a zero. Vote against it, you get 100. Apparently, it's that simple. There you have it, the purity of the Tea Party movement. But Temple said he understood the compromise might be coming. So he offered a long list of things Republicans could do that would lead the Tea Party movement as a whole to possibly forgive Boehner and the House Republicans a small bump in the debt limit. On the list was keeping the front lines of America's war as free of openly gay people and women of any sexually leaning as possible.
Hey, what happened?
That's right. You can raise the debt ceiling as long as you keep the gays out of the military. Temple said that if, quote, the House Armed Services Committee and the Pentagon slow down on injecting open homosexuality in females into their forward combat roles, Tea Partiers may be able to put up with their House Republicans voting for an American government services paid for with more borrowed cash.
Hey, what happened?
Surprise, surprise.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. There is the fiscally pure Tea Partiers. Colonial garb and regalia. This is what our founding fathers stood for. You got to raise the debt ceiling, go ahead, as long as you can piss on the gays.
Don't piss down my back and tell me it's raining.
That's right, it's raining, folks.
Can we organize a trip to this Tea Party Freedom Jamboree?
Very possibly, as long as we can prove that we're manly men. No pink ties, no feminization when we head to that jamboree. So there you have it, folks. The new GOP base, same as the old GOP base. And lastly, got to get this out here. It is National Asthma Month, Asthma Awareness Month. And kudos to coal industry, or at least this one player in the coal industry, Peabody Energy, put out a press release, announces Coal Cares Initiative, new nationwide campaign against stigma of childhood asthma. Peabody Energy today announced the creation of an innovative new public health initiative designed to combat the stigma of asthma among American children ages 0 through 18. You should know that about 1 in 12 people in the United States now has asthma, a total of 25 million people, an increase of 4.3 million people since 2001. Asthma's on the rise, particularly with children, and it's very expensive for people. So Peabody, with Coal Cares at coalcares.org, Peabody will offer free custom-branded inhaler actuators to children living within 200 miles of a coal plant, along with coupons worth $10 towards the purchase of asthma medication itself. Quote, too many young Americans face daily schoolyard taunting and bullying because of a condition over which they have no control, said Gregory H. Boyce, chairman and chief executive officer of Peabody Energy. By rebranding the inhaler as a cool, individualized, must-have accessory, Cole Cares will empower children to tell bullies, suck it up. Children can choose from a variety of youth theme inhaler cases from tween faves like the Bieber and My Little Pony to the emo and diamond inhalers for older style conscious youth. There's even, quote, my first inhaler for tots. Cole Cares and its Puff Puff line of inhalers is the first and most ambitious market-friendly public health initiative of this scope of any privately owned American company and testifies to the energy industry's commitment to the well-being of all citizens, including the youngest. Well, Peabody Energy, congrats to you for caring enough as Cole to provide those hip and cool asthma inhalers. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's our program for today. You can go to colecares.org to find more about this initiative. I should tell you, it is a satire piece by the Yes Men, which I mention only because of the Twitter followers I have that are now freaking out. Hey, Sam, I think that's satire.
Really?
I know, it's getting tougher and tougher to tell these days. But check it out, that colecares.org. Pretty funny. Send it on to your friends. Get it out there. Get it viral. It does the job, ladies and gentlemen. Now, coming up, you can IM me at Majority FM. You can call at 646-257-3920. If you can become a member, please, please, please do so. We need your support to keep this show alive. You can get the best in fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate at justcoffee.coop. Put the coupon code Majority in there. Use our Amazon link at majority.fm. Donate your Twitter account to us. Everything you can do to help us spread the word on this show helps. Like us on Facebook at Majority FM on Facebook. See you on the flip side later in this week. We'll be talking about the Googleization of everything, and we'll be talking to Morgan Spurlock about his latest film. We will be back if you join me on the flip side right now at Majority FM.